If that song reminds you of the Green Bay Packers, then you are probably going to like this hour. This is the song that is frequently played after the Packers score a touchdown in Lambeau Field. At least it was the last time I was there for a game. Are you a fan of the Green Bay Packers? Not everyone is, believe it or not. We probably have some Bears fans and Viking fans listening right now, too. But that's okay. We'll even invite calls from you this hour. We're going to talk about some of the highlights and perhaps some of the lowlights of the Green Bay Packers in recent history during this hour with someone who has had a perspective from the sidelines, someone who was one of the first women in the country to host an NFL coaches show. If you are a Packers fan, you are probably familiar with Jessie Garcia. If not, you will learn more about her and her experiences as a woman in sportscasting. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, October 24th. You can call in with your questions about your perceptions of women in sportscasting. Do you think that they have achieved equity with male sportscasters? You can call in with your questions about the Packers or other Wisconsin sports teams, some memories perhaps, some favorite players, maybe current season. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Jessie Garcia is a Madison native. She's been a sportscaster for the past 20 years, first with WISC-TV in Madison, now with WTMJ-TV in Milwaukee. And she is the author of My Life with the Green and Gold, Tales from 20 Years of Sportscasting. Good morning, Jessie.
Good morning, Joy. How are you today?
I'm good. We have met before. Jessie, as I mentioned, started with WISC-TV in Madison, which is where my husband, Rob Starbuck, works, and he says, hello, Jessie.
I certainly remember Rob. Certainly remember you. I think we were at a couple of parties together.
That's true.
Way back in the day.
Yes, we were. And we also ran into you one time during a vacation in Door County, and I read in your book that that's like your all-time favorite spot to go on vacation.
That's true. Yeah, I think I remember that we ran into you in Ephraim.
That's right.
Right down by where all the boats are and that beautiful shoreline. And yeah, so I remember that as well. And Door County is absolutely our top vacation destination.
Well, it is good to reconnect with you over the radio, and I have certainly followed you on television over all these years. Let's get a little bit of background, though, first, Jessie. I mean, sportscasting was not exactly in your genes, was it?
No, it was not. I'm an only child, and I was raised primarily by a single mother until she met my stepfather, and she is not at all interested in sports. I don't think she could name one Green Bay Packer other than maybe Aaron Rodgers at the current moment. Sports is not a part of our lives at all. I grew up not watching any sporting events, so how did I become a sportscaster might be the next natural question.
Mm-hmm. That's
it. The answer would be, that really it was around high school time. I knew from a very early age, I should backtrack and say, I knew from a very early age that I wanted to be a writer or a journalist of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
But the sports part came a little later in high school when I started playing sports myself, even though I was not a good athlete at all. And then when the crowd that I was hanging around with liked sports. And so we watched a lot of Brewers games, Badgers games, that sort of thing. My stepfather, when he came into my life, took me to some Badger basketball games. And it was just so much fun that I fell in love with the emotion of it and the way that it rallied a whole community together. And I decided really to focus on covering sports. Being a reporter, I didn't want to cover negative news all the time. I wanted to cover something that made people happy.
Well, you didn't have many role models, though, did you, when it came to women in sports?
No, I didn't. I graduated from college in 1992, and at the time, there were a few. It's not that it was totally unheard of. Robin Roberts, who, of course, many people would know is on Good Morning America now. She was in sports at the time on ESPN, as was another woman named Linda Cohn. And Leslie Visser did a lot of NFL games. So there were a few national role models, but there were zero local role models. I wound up being the first female to anchor a sportscast in the whole state of Wisconsin.
Well, that's what I thought. I don't remember when you started in Madison. I don't think I ever saw anybody in the Madison market, a woman in sports, or at least anchoring. And you did become the anchor at WISC, didn't you?
I did, mm-hmm. although as detailed in the book, when they first hired me, they hired me part-time right out of college. I had interned there, so I knew them a little bit. And I bombarded the news director with postcards from college. I went to school out in Boston and, you know, telling him that this was, you know, I was desperate for my dream job. And when they hired me part-time, they said, we'll hire you just as a reporter. They were really, really wary of having a female sports anchor. They didn't know how Madison would react to that. And it wasn't until a couple of months later when our main sports anchor was actually ill, then I had to fill in for him, that they said, okay, we're gonna try you out on the anchor desk. The same thing happened when I went to WTMJ in Milwaukee. They were a little uncertain about whether or not they wanted to hire a female sports anchor. This was now 1994, and they wound up hiring me part-time news and part-time sports. So my very first story in Milwaukee, I had to go out and cover a news story. But within a couple of months of that, they realized, okay, people are accepting this. This is okay. People are willing to have a female read sports to them. You can be full-time sports. And they took me out of news.
How did Madison react to their first, you know, female sports anchor?
Well, mostly positive. You know, I would say 98% positive. But, you know, growing up there, and I always thought and still think of Madison as such an open-minded town and a great place to grow up, by the way. But when I came back and I had such a huge support network as well, I just sort of assumed that everybody would think it was great that there was a woman doing sports. And that wasn't the case. I detail in the book as well a phone call that I took from a man after anchoring sports one night at WISC. And he said, I am never going to watch Channel 3 again. And I said, why? And he said, because you're a chick and chicks know nothing about sports. And I was shocked because it really made me realize that, you know, not every single person is going to be 100% behind me here. And it probably made me stronger in the end because I had to work harder to earn the trust of some people.
Well, what about the athletes that you covered? Did you get any, I don't know, flack from them for being a woman reporting on them from the sidelines or maybe even in the locker room?
Yeah, that's a good question. For the most part, the athletes have been very, very accommodating. And even early on, I think they were somewhat used to some of the national female sportscasters being around. And it seemed to me that maybe they had been told, too, you know, that you're going to treat all reporters the same. So I didn't have any issues with any of them saying, you know, a woman can't do this job. With the athletes, what there was more of was, you know, there was a Green Bay Packers player who shall go unnamed, you know, who told me he would do an interview with me if I gave him my phone number. You know, so there was a little bit of that athlete flirting that you had to get past with some of the guys. And as far as the locker room goes, everybody asks about the locker room all the time. It's not what you think. There is a cooling off period. By the time you get in there, the guys who do not want to be interviewed are hiding out in the trainer's room anyway. And the guys who do want to be interviewed, you know, are in a state of how they want to be interviewed. Most of them want to be dressed. So it's really not an issue. I had one major locker room incident, which is detailed in the book as well, that was actually with a team that was visiting from out of state, not with one of our in-state teams, was making me feel uncomfortable because I was a woman. There've been a couple of players over the years, and Reggie White was the most prominent one who did not do any interviews in the locker room. He would go outside the locker room. That was his belief. He didn't think that any reporter should be in the locker room. And so male and female reporters would follow him to the hallway and do an interview there. And that was fine because it was equal to both genders.
Yeah, and that's interesting. So, you did have, and again, you didn't name names, this must have been the out-of-state athlete who on purpose wanted to attract your attention and have you turn around and see that he was naked?
Yeah, actually, I think the incident you're referring to is a little bit later in the book, and that actually was one of our local teams, which was surprising to me because that really hadn't happened in 20 years. But the out-of-state team, and you know, I say their name in the book, so I can say it here. It was the Cleveland Indians. They were in town to play the Milwaukee Brewers. And it was, you know, I walked in and they started doing catcalls and making me feel really, really uncomfortable about being there. And, you know, I wound up leaving in tears you know, maybe 15 minutes later, and we actually wound up filing a complaint with the Indians' PR department about the way that I was treated in that locker room. But I was also told from the Indians' PR department, well, that's just boys being boys. That's the way they are. You know, they joke around with everybody. So at least I felt like we had done something. We hadn't just sat, you know, didn't just sit there and take it. But at the same time, I didn't feel like much was going to change with that particular team.
Yeah, and you were, you mentioned in the book that you gave the athletes who were in the locker room respect and I guess modesty. You would turn around and ask the cameraman to let you know that everybody was decent?
Yes. I mean, that's been my personal policy forever. So if somebody is changing, you know, which does happen in the locker room, you know, I will turn around. I'm almost always with a male photographer. And if I'm not, I will ask another male who's in the room, you know, just let me know when he's ready. Because I just want to treat them with the respect that I would like to be treated with if I were in a locker room situation getting changed. So, you know, I will turn my back and then they'll say, okay, he's ready, he's done. And we'll go over and ask if he's willing to do an interview.
Yeah. So do you think, Jesse, that we have achieved some sort of equity in male and female sportscasters?
I think we're getting there. You know, as you mentioned, when I first started, you know, one of the first females to host an NFL coaches show and, you know, first female to anchor sports in Wisconsin. But now there are many other females just in the state of Wisconsin. It's actually almost a trendy thing now, which I think is good and bad, because I do see that that some women are leapfrogging over men, and I want to make sure that it's done on merit and not just on we want to get a female on staff because it's trendy. And, you know, so a young female journalist, a sports journalist, has a very good shot at getting a good job these days, but you also have to know what you're doing because people will see through you really quickly if you don't. But as far as equity, I think we're really getting there. And I have almost zero problems these days with any sexism or anything of that nature. And that includes from viewers, from athletes, coaches, and from male colleagues as well. It's just, it's the way it is. There are men and there are women, and we are equally capable of talking about sports.
Well, we are talking about sports, and we are talking with Jesse Garcia. She is the author of My Life with the Green and Gold, Tales from 20 Years of Sportscasting. And we welcome your questions for her, some memories perhaps for her, favorite players. What do you think about women reporting sports? Not an issue? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Jesse Garcia. She is a longtime sportscaster. She's first with WISC in Madison, now with WTMJ in Milwaukee. And she is the author of the new book, My Life with the Green and Gold, Tales from 20 Years of Sportscasting. If you have a question for Jesse, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. All right, so Jesse, you were the first female anchor host of a NFL sports or coaches show. What show was that?
That was the Mike Holmgren show, and I hosted that show. This was his last year in Green Bay before he left for Seattle. And I'd like to think that I would have kept hosting it if he would have continued on. But then the show changed when Ray Rhodes and Mike Sherman came, and then I re-hosted it again with Mike McCarthy when he joined the Packers.
Yeah. So what would you consider, I know you can't pick a favorite moment, but what do you think is the highlight or one of the top highlights of your career?
Oh, boy. Well, I've covered three Super Bowls, and the book details behind the scenes of those three Super Bowls. And certainly the two Super Bowl victories were a lot easier to cover than the Super Bowl loss. Because the players were so understandably despondent after the loss, they didn't want to come out and do a ton of interviews afterwards. So, And I really think that Super Bowl 31 victory I would probably have to put as the highlight, because it had been so many decades since the Packers had been to the top of the mountain, and to be there and you know, see them up close riding the crest of that wave was simply amazing, and to see the state and how they reacted. So I'd probably choose that as number one. Super Bowl 45, certainly up there as well. And then I've been to the White House with the Packers, and I've been to Tokyo, Japan with the Packers when they played a preseason game over there. We actually went over to cover the preseason game there. So those were certainly highlights as well. But if you're asking me to pick one, I'll take Super Bowl 31. Yeah.
You also got to go to the White House too, didn't you?
Yes. So I did go to the White House, and so this was after the Super Bowl 31 victory. President Clinton was in office, and that there's an entire chapter on the White House and the White House visit. And it was, you know, it was very interesting to see from a reporter's standpoint. We did our live shots from right there on the lawn. The ceremony was held in the Rose Garden, and I got to see President Clinton in a little bit more of a personal moment, as he was actually standing underneath a tree practicing his putting before the ceremony started, when the reporters were let in early to just set up our cameras and that kind of thing. And I looked over, and there's President Clinton under a tree doing some putting before the ceremony. So, you know, little moments like that I tried to capture in this book.
We have callers, so let's bring in Victor from Milwaukee. Hello, Victor.
Hello, Joy. Hello, Jesse. I just want to thank you, Joy, for bringing sports up to the forefront. You know, it's my love, so thank you for that. And I also thank you for Mad About Football a while ago.
You're welcome, Victor.
My question for Jesse is, what is it about, generally, about Wisconsin sports team and your observations? It just seemed like we're within hailing distance, or we're on the edge of making the championship, but we just don't get over that hump. And it just seems like our sports, particularly the Brewers and the Bucks, they seem like they don't make it, or we lose players to other teams and they go on to like the World Series or the NBA Finals. Is there something in management or our recruiting that causes this to happen?
Sure, good question, Victor. I think, you know, it depends on the sport, obviously. It depends on the team. But we are smaller market, you know, for if you compare us to in any league. We are usually the smallest or one of the smallest markets in that particular league. And so, you know, that does hurt us in some senses. And we're also a cold weather market. And so, you know, you have a lot of free agents and people like that who may choose to go to Miami instead of coming to Milwaukee or Green Bay, although Reggie White and other major free agents have certainly changed the culture around in Green Bay. But I think both of those things, you know, tend to go against us at times. But we're not the only ones. I mean, all of this is cyclical. And you look at, you know, the Minnesota Vikings, you know, who've never won a Super Bowl. So, you know, their fans would complain about something like that. And certainly any other market could have their moments where they'd say, well, we haven't won in X number of years either. So it's hard to get to the top of the mountain, and even harder to stay there, I think.
Victor?
Yes, thank you for that. I have one more question for you. There's the issue about women being in men's locker room. Was there ever an issue with men being in women's locker room? Has that ever been addressed?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. As far as I know, men are not allowed into women's locker rooms. Now, we don't have a WNBA team, so I've never covered the WNBA. So, honestly, I don't have any firsthand knowledge of how that works. And I can tell you that college locker rooms are different, at least the colleges that I've covered are different than any professional locker room. So, for instance, if you're covering the Wisconsin Badgers, nobody's allowed into the locker room, male or female. They bring them out into a weight training room, bring the players in there, and that's where you do your interviews. But, yeah, as far as men in a woman's locker room, not that I know of, but that's not to say it's not happening somewhere. And I don't know that if there's an official law against that, a rule against that, or if it's just sort of the unspoken way. It's a good point, good question.
Victor, thanks so much for the call. Good question. Speaking of the Badgers, the anniversary of that horrible stadium crush is coming up, and I happen to know that you are working on a story on that because Channel 3 is also working on a story on that. And were you there? I mean, was that one of your first big assignments?
You know, it's interesting. That day of the stadium crush, and I think some people will remember that, and if you don't, it was the Badgers had beaten Michigan for the first time in, I believe it was 12 years at that time, so this was 1993, and all these fans came storming, wanting to go onto the field. They came out of the stands, pouring onto the field, and there was a crush of people. They got pushed against the fence and pushed against each other. Over 70 people were injured. You know, some of them had to be resuscitated on the field. And, yeah, we are running a story on WTMJ actually Monday night, looking back at 20 years later. Spoke with a survivor who lives down in Peoria, Illinois, and listened to her emotional stories. It was simply incredible that, you know, and thankfully nobody passed away, because it was really about as close as you can get to that happening. But for me personally, I was just a year out of college, and I had been sent to the high school football playoffs, which were also going on that day. I think it was in Oconomowoc, if memory serves, and we would shoot things ourselves. So I went by myself with the camera on my shoulder, shooting the high school football game, and I was driving back listening to the radio, and I'm hearing them talk about PNBs, which stands for pulseless non-breathers, on the field. And I was just in complete shock, raced back to the station as fast as I could to try to help out with whatever coverage could be done at that point. But no, I was not actually at the game, but I remember it vividly.
Yes, I was at that game. And the 20-year anniversary is coming up. I think it's next week sometime in the actual date.
Yeah, the 30th is the actual day.
We have Leon who emails, do you think that there is a glass ceiling for women doing play-by-play for major sports? And do you have any interest in covering women's sports?
I know of one woman who does play-by-play for major sports, and she does Badger games sometimes as well. And I think she's fantastic. I really think she's good. She's the only one that I know of offhand who's really broken through that glass ceiling. So I do think that there still exists that a little bit. There are a lot of female sideline reporters, but not a lot of females who are in the booth, as they say, which means, you know, either being the play-by-play person or the color analyst. And why that is, I don't know. I don't know if the females aren't striving for that job or they're not given the same chances. For me personally, I was the Packers sideline reporter for years, and for preseason games, and it was great fun. I don't have interest in being a play-by-play person myself. I like covering the game from a different angle rather than just giving the actual play-by-play. So it's not something that I strive to do, but I would love to see more women in that role.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Jesse Garcia. She's the author of My Life with the Green and Gold, Tales from 20 Years of Sportscasting. And our next caller is Gordon in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Gordon.
Hi, good morning. Boy, great program. It's great to listen to Jesse Garcia. I've always liked what you did with the Mike Holmgren show and always did a great job. So my question is, what was it like to interview big stars like Reggie White when he was with the Packers, and back in December 95, when he had that torn hamstring and God healed his hamstring? What was it like interviewing him during those times?
Sure. I thought he was a larger-than-life figure. I always really, really admired him and Mike Holmgren and their relationship together. I thought they had a very funny relationship. If I recall correctly, when that torn hamstring happened, Mike Holmgren told a very funny story about how Reggie showed up at his house, and it was around Christmas time, and he thought he was, you know, some Christmas elf or something appearing, and here comes Reggie White telling him that his hamstring is healed and he's ready to go. And so I always thought that they just had a really nice, comfortable relationship. And Reggie, I'd so admired him, and I was so stunned by his untimely death, and did a long sit-down interview with his widow, Sarah, not long after he passed away. And listening to her and her memories as well just really made him so vivid and so impressive. But, yeah, the one thing about covering these athletes, though, whether it be Reggie White or anybody else, is the more you are around them, the more you realize that they are just human beings as well. So even though I describe him as larger than life, and part of that was his stature, because he was, you know, a head taller than me and, you know, twice my size width-wise and that sort of thing, you also see that they're just normal people. And part of me writing this book was just to get some of those personal memories across to. There's a whole chapter on Brett Favre, and I talk about some of the moments that, you know, I actually saw him as a real, as a dad and as a husband and just as a person, watching his wife playing basketball in a middle school gym in Green Bay 2 days before a San Francisco playoff game, you know, that kind of thing. Having a potty training conversation with Brett Favre because both of our kids were born about the same time, and we once joked about, you know, how potty training was going for each kid. So, you know, things like that that really just make them human as well.
Do you have a favorite memory of Brett Favre?
I really think that middle school gym story just stands out to me. We were doing a story called, it was about Packer wives playing their own sports. And so we went to the gym where there was a Packer wives basketball team, and they would play other women's basketball teams. And his wife, Deanna, was on the team, as well as a few other wives. And he was just sitting in this middle school gym on the floor, watching their daughter, Brittany, she was probably 10 at the time. She was doing cartwheels along the side. And he didn't want to be interviewed for that story. He wanted me to just interview Deanna. We got a shot of him watching, but it was not something that he wanted to yield the spotlight to her. And then from there, we went to a Packer Wives Volleyball League at an indoor facility, and a lot of the players were there watching their wives play. And it just seemed like it was so refreshing for them to be the spectator and to be cheering on another family member instead of vice versa. So that one always stands out to me as one of the moments with Brett Favre that I enjoyed.
You did do a lot of reporting, besides game coverage and that sort of thing. You did do some feature stories that maybe were not the typical sports statistics type stories. You were doing stories purposefully to appeal to women?
Not purposely to appeal to women, necessarily. But, yeah, I've always thought that my strength and the thing that I enjoy the most is telling more of the human side of players and coaches and games and, you know, anything that's going on in the world of sports. You know, I'm really not that much of a statistics person. Mm-hmm. So I don't like to memorize stats or, you know, I can't remember the exact score from this game or that game, but I remember the emotions and how it made everybody feel. So over the years, I've strived to tell more of the behind the scenes or the personal look at some of these players and coaches. I mean, that Packers wives playing sports story was my idea just from something that I had heard. That same year, we did Packer Pets. We did, you know, the tailor who fixes the rips in the clothing. There's a whole sewing area down in the bowels of Lambeau Field that we did a feature story on. And I always figured that people could get the stats and that sort of thing in many, many, many different outlets, especially when it comes to the Packers and all the coverage. And I wanted to bring something just a little bit different to the table that might be memorable for them.
You mentioned that you and Brett Favre would trade potty training stories. You also were the first person probably ever to change a diaper in the tunnel that the players use at Lambeau Field. How did that happen?
Yeah, there's a picture of this said event in the book. I had my first child. He's now 14 and a freshman in high school. But when he was an infant, I had to go up to Lambeau Field to record something. We had a show called Inside 1265, 1265 Lombardi Avenue being the address of the Green Bay Packers. And I didn't have a babysitter, and I was also nursing. And so he came with me up to Lambeau Field. He was only a couple of months old. And as babies do, he slept mostly through the entire thing, which was great. But when he needed his diaper changed and we were doing all of our stand-ups and things right there on the field, I went into the Packers tunnel and changed his diaper right down there, and somebody snapped a picture of it from the crew. And there is a picture of that in the book, as well as we put his little car seat on the 50-yard line, and they took a picture of me there with him as well. So the crew was always great and very accommodating, but there were definitely some funny moments trying to balance kids and work, and I have a whole chapter called Packers and Play-Doh, which kind of summed up many years of my life.
Let's go to Richard now in Milwaukee. Hello, Richard.
Oh, hi. Thanks. Jesse, I've really enjoyed your work over the years. Thank you so much. I have maybe
thank
a little
you.
Bit of a different question, and I'm a huge sports fan, so I want to put that in context. I guess the question I have is, I understand that high school sports are one thing, and maybe college is something a little bit different, but professional sports, I guess a lot of people might view it as basically show business, as professional sports. I understand other levels are not just about show business, but I'm wondering how you kind of twist that in your mind and critiques maybe of people talking about, well, you know, it's just sports. It's just sports. It's show business. On the professional level, how you justify that in your mind, how you view that, is it something more than show business on the professional level?
I think so. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, WWE here or something like that, where it's more of like a show. I mean, these are athletes who are putting their hearts and souls into it, you know, year-round these days. It's not something that you just do even during your season. So I understand what you mean about show business, and certainly, you know, the NFL is a giant money-making machine and all of that type of thing. But when you see it up close and you see how hard these coaches and these players work, I don't think of it as just that. And also how they sacrifice their bodies, and certainly there's been a lot of talk about that lately as well, and all of the injuries. But I think sports are really important. Somebody asked me, I was speaking to a group of high school kids last week, and somebody in the audience asked, you know, are sports relevant? Are they important? Why do we need sports? And in my opinion, it's for the very reason I got into it in the first place, which is because it unites us, and it brings out emotion, and it's something that people look forward to all week long, the game on Saturday or the game on Sunday, you know, that type of thing. And so many memories, I think, are tied around sporting events as well. If you went to a game with a family member or a friend, something like that, you know, you remember that, and it becomes important, an important part of your life. So I think sports will always have an important part in our life as being just a sort of a getaway and entertainment, but something that we can really admire and appreciate, too. I could never be an athlete. As I mentioned, I'm really a bad athlete. So to be around all these great athletes is so awe-inspiring to me that I just really enjoy it from that standpoint as well.
You touched on it, but let's share Kelly from Sun Prairie, her email. I have lived all over the U.S. for my job, and I've never seen such rabid football fans. Why are Wisconsinites such fanatics for the Badgers and the Packers?
Wow, good question. Well, I think with the Packers, a lot of it has to do with the shareholders and being able to buy into the team, and the fact that we have a different ownership structure than, you know, any other team in the league, and the longevity, how long they've been around, and being the smallest market makes it a very intimate thing as well. If you live in Green Bay or you spend any time in Green Bay, you will see Green Bay Packers. You know, I'll go to a restaurant and there's JerMichael Finley, you know, mm-hmm. picking up a sandwich, and, you know, hey, JerMichael, how's it going? You know, or other players, whoever it might be. So it's, you know, you sort of feel a little more connected, I think, to these players as well. And with the Badgers, you know, since Barry Alvarez joined, and there's been this resurgence, and you know, they've made Rose Bowls and bowl games in general just an absolute habit. People have become invigorated about the Badgers, and it's a great school. Even though I didn't go to college there, it is a fantastic school, and people who graduate from there rave about it and say that there's no place better than the University of Wisconsin. So they're very loyal alums, and you know, what's better than, in my mind anyway, than being at a Badger game and the excitement, or being at a Packer game and the excitement, and the crowd and the cheerleaders and the band, and, you know, just everything that goes along with it just gets your adrenaline pumping.
We're talking with Jessie Garcia. She's been a sportscaster for the past 20 years, first with WISC-TV in Madison, now with WTMJ-TV in Milwaukee, and she is the author of My Life with the Green and Gold, Tales from 20 Years of Sportscasting. And we welcome your questions for her, or some memories you might have. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So are you a fan of the Green Bay Packers? Well, we'll talk a little bit more about the current Green Bay Packers with our guest, Jessie Garcia. author of My Life with the Green and Gold, and we'll continue to welcome your questions for her. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What about the Green Bay Packers this season, Jesse? Are they going to do okay?
Well, they certainly have had more than their fair share of injuries. I think anybody who follows the team knows that. But they have an incredible quarterback and an incredible way of having the next man step up, you know, which is always the mentality in the NFL. So I think they're going to be okay, especially based on the way the rest of the division looks right now. The Vikings are really floundering. The Bears have their own injuries, especially with Jay Cutler. The Lions, though, could still be a factor. But, you know, I think the Packers, you know, will make the playoffs. And then once you make the playoffs, anything can happen. It's really anybody's game. It's a whole new season once the playoffs start.
I know you covered Brett Favre over the years and the transition from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers. First, is all forgiven with Brett Favre and how he did not leave the Packers under the best of circumstances?
I think we're getting there. You know, time heals all wounds, and I think that time is proving to be the tonic that is needed here for fans and for the organization. But it was an ugly, messy divorce, and to watch that firsthand, I never, ever would have imagined that this would happen with Brett Favre, because he was just such a mega star and mm-hmm. so beloved for all those years. And so to see his downfall was really, really hard and shocking, I thought. I never would have thought that he would have wound up playing for the Minnesota Vikings. So, you know, I have to say that I do think that slowly between Favre and Rodgers having some public moments together and Favre making some comments, I just saw that Aaron Rodgers is Brett Favre's fantasy quarterback on his fantasy football
really?
Team.
Really? Oh, good.
And he's said, oh, yeah, he's my fantasy quarterback. He gets me 30 points a game. So, you know, it's warming up between the two of them, and I think that fans are going to, over the years, really appreciate Brett Favre for what he did, and we'll get past all of the ugly nastiness that occurred in those final couple of years.
Boyd emails, was there anyone on the Packers that was difficult to interview? I've heard some not-so-good things about Mark Chmura in that way, but you, Jesse, do not need to mention names on the air.
Well, thank you for that. Actually, I thought Mark Chmura was a great interview. I had no issues interviewing Mark Chmura, so I will say that. Certainly, there are some players who are easier to interview than others, but that's life. You know, there are some people who are more comfortable in front of a camera or in the spotlight than other people. So, you know, you always, as a reporter, you sort of knew who the really good sound bites would be, and you knew who maybe wasn't so comfortable having a microphone and 25 cameras, you know, shoved in front of their face. It's not an easy thing, and these are young guys, so you have to kind of keep that in mind as well when you're doing some of these interviews. I mean, who would be comfortable in a situation like that coming right out of college? So I always try to keep that in mind. But, yeah, I mean, there were some who were better than others, but honestly, and it's not that I wouldn't name their names, I wouldn't, but there's not one person that I can say, oh, there was this one guy who was just a horrible interview. You know, it really wasn't like that, because you can get anybody to open up in time, and sometimes it's just a matter of them speaking to you more on a one-on-one basis. Those crowd interviews can be very daunting, but if you can get them on a one-on-one basis, they could be a whole different person, too.
To Gordon in Waukesha next. Hello, Gordon.
Good morning. Very interesting show. I'd like to hear Jesse's take on the NFL concussion scandal that's been reported on PBS and also several articles in Sports Illustrated.
Sure. I watched the PBS documentary, which I thought was so well done, A League of Denial. And it's really is disturbing. Back when I started in this business, we never really talked about concussions. It was you got your bell rung mm-hmm. or you got a stinger, and most players went back in. And, it, you know, you never knew about all these long-term ramifications. So to see this coming out now is just, it's horrifying. And I really can't watch football with the same joy that I used to be able to watch football, because when you see something like JerMichael Finley's injury or any player, you know, who has anything like that, you know, it's just, I feel kind of physically sick thinking about what it might mean in the long term. And so I don't want to see people so badly injured for our entertainment or our enjoyment. But how do you reconcile that? You know, they keep trying to do better equipment, different tackling techniques, but then you get all of the, you know, the defenders complaining, well, where do I hit the guy? I can't hit him high. I can't hit him low. How am I supposed to play this game at all? So it is the number one topic facing the NFL and something that they're going to have to figure out. I can't quite imagine the NFL just fading away at some point, but I can imagine that, you know, if they don't do something or at least own up to maybe past mistakes, that people are going to be turned off. And some people may say, well, I'm not going to spend my hard-earned money buying a ticket. You know, why should I support them? That sort of thing. So I think it is the number one thing that the NFL has to worry about in these coming years.
Thanks, Gordon. Bob in Beaver Dam is next. Hello, Bob.
Hi, how you doing, Joy? I want to say thanks for your show and a warm welcome to Jesse.
Thank you.
I'd like Jesse to discuss the different challenges in covering different sports and what was the inspiration for writing her book.
Well, let's see. The challenges in covering different sports. Well, you know, it's funny, living in Milwaukee, I would say the number one challenge of covering the Green Bay Packers is that they're almost 2 hours away from us. We are the only city or the only state that has your largest city that doesn't have your NFL team or has it so far away. So, you know, from a reporter's standpoint, it's a challenge because that's 4 hours of driving just in that alone. So you tack on 4 hours of driving to your day no matter what. And we are up there quite a bit. I mean, there were times when I practically lived in Green Bay for many, many years, and I never did live in Green Bay. That was the thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'd be driving back and forth on icy roads or late at night, that kind of thing. And we stayed in hotels a lot as well. But that's probably the number one challenge, I think, for us. And then, you know, as far as covering other teams, I don't know that I can think that there's a challenge. I've really enjoyed not being just a single beat reporter. So I admire the beat reporters because they get so immersed in that particular team and that particular season. But I like being able to cover a lot of different things. So I may be covering the Packers, you know, today, but then tomorrow I could be out doing the Bucks or the Brewers or Marquette or, you know, going over to Madison for Badgers or something. So, you know, you have to be up on everything, but it also keeps a real variety. As to your second question, what was the inspiration or why did I write the book? I, throughout all the years of sportscasting, kept thinking to myself, this is so funny behind the scenes, or if only people knew what this was really like. And I always wanted to, I love writing, and I always wanted to write more. In television, it's all about shorter, shorter, shorter. So even like a 2.5-minute story, even a 2-minute story, is considered a long story in television. So we're always trying to cut things shorter, shorter, shorter. And to be able to sit down and have the freedom to write was really refreshing. And I just thought to myself, it felt like a good time. We had just finished Super Bowl 45. I had been in sportscasting for 20 years. And one day it was a cold December day, and I sat at my kitchen table and started typing away on the laptop on a possible first chapter that had just been kind of swimming around in my head. And I remember I had to anchor sports for WTMJ that day. I started writing at maybe 9 or 10 in the morning, and I could not stop. I had to literally rip myself away to go in and do my real job that day. And then for the next 2 weeks, I think I was up until 5 a.m. almost every night writing. It just kind of poured out, and it took me probably a little less than 2 months, I think, to get the first draft down and then to find a publisher. I found a great publisher in the Wisconsin Historical Society Press out of Madison. We were a perfect fit for each other because they love Wisconsin, and I love Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and the book is all about Wisconsin sports. And then from then, when you sign with a publisher, it takes almost a year and a half of the production process before the book is actually released.
Thanks for the call, Bobby. It's, yes, about your experience sportscasting, Jesse, but it's also about your experience as a working mom. I mean, that was, as much as we might think it's really glamorous and fun and exciting, and it is a lot of what you do, it's also a lot of work, and it keeps you away from home a lot, and that was a struggle for you, wasn't it?
Certainly a struggle. I mean, the prologue opens with me leaving for Super Bowl 45 and being really, really torn about leaving my kids and thinking about, you know, my youngest child, who then at that point was 7 years old, and he was clinging to my leg, not wanting me to go. And so, you know, it rips your heart out when that happens. It's really hard. I dropped down to part-time after my oldest one was born. And as I mentioned, he's now 14, and I've been part-time ever since. And that has made a big difference for me, because sports are all nights, weekends, and holidays. As you can understand, that's when sports are happening. So that's when you are expected to work. But it makes it challenging. And I think that really comes through in this book in a lot of different ways, in a lot of different chapters, the struggle to kind of balance it. And some of the funny moments, some of the tender moments, some of the painful moments of trying to balance all of that.
Another call from Jim in Brookfield. Hello, Jim.
Good morning, Joy and Jesse. Jesse, I just want to say I've enjoyed watching you through the years on TMJ, and I really appreciate the fact that when the local teams win or lose, you've always been very professional, upbeat, and sticking to the facts. You don't have this shock and awe or sad sack homer expression like, oh, my God, the Packers lost. You know, I mean, after all, it is a game, and, you know, the local teams will win and lose. And whenever the Packers unfortunately do lose, I always want to make sure if I can catch TMJ to see if you're on, that, you know, keep it professional and keeping to the facts. My question is, you know, growing up as a kid, I've always noticed there's been like an East Coast bias in sports, that the Giants, the Jets, the Mets and Yankees, you know, they always seem to get more press. And I'm just wondering, in this day in 2013, if you think there's still that East Coast bias, because a lot of the media is, you know, located there, that the Giants and Jets may get a little bit more attention than other teams?
Well, first of all, I really appreciate your comments. Thank you. I honestly think there's kind of an East Coast bias in national news as well. When I watch the national news sometimes, and so many of their stories are New York, New Jersey, that kind of thing, I think that there is a little bit of that. You know, they might still think of us as the flyover states, and they don't realize how great we are, right? So, and sports-wise, I believe that happens a little bit as well. You know, with ESPN, they try to cover everything, and you'll get highlights of everything, but you may not get the reporter at the scene or the feature story type thing that you would elsewhere. So I think that's interesting. You know, with the Brewers, somebody was mentioning last season, Gene Segura, you know, if he were in on an East Coast team, how much press he'd be getting. And it was a big deal when a national sports outlet sent somebody to do a feature story on Gene Segura. So there's still a little bit of that, yeah. And we still have to fight a little bit to show that, hey, you know, we're a lot more than just the flyover states over here.
We have less than 30 seconds, Jesse. Boy, this time flew. Are the Packers going to beat Minnesota on Sunday?
I think so. Minnesota has some major quarterback problems. Packers are there in Rodgers. I mean, anything fluky can happen in a Packers-Vikings game, right? But I think they've got a really good chance.
If there's another Super Bowl with the Packers in it next year, are you going to be there?
That's a good question. I don't know. As detailed in the book, I've made a few changes to my schedule, and I'm also teaching at a couple of local colleges. So I'd have to see if it worked out schedule-wise. But I feel fortunate that I was able to cover three.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Joy.
Jesse Garcia, author of My Life with the Green and Gold, Tales from 20 Years of Sports Casting. Thanks to Robin Cherry for producing and directing this show. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.